Hello, you're listening to KXCGLP 105.7 FM, and this is Valley News and Views here on, once again, KXCGLP 105.7 FM, Cave Junction, Oregon, and the entire Illinois Valley. And this is our new public affairs program, Valley News and Views. I am Forrest, and I am a volunteer DJ here at the station. And today we are joined by Emily Ring and Ricky Perrin from Josephine County Emergency Management. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good evening.
And Emily is the Assistant Emergency Manager, and Ricky is the Outreach and Education Coordinator. I got that right?
Almost. Education and outreach and education, it's all the same.
Ah, very good. All right, so we've got a lot to talk about today, and before we dive into the subject matter, which is going to involve a lot of exciting things about fires and storms and potential earthquakes, I just want to remind everyone that this is a call-in show, so please call the station here at 541-592-4112. That's 592-4112. With your questions for Emily or Ricky, and we aren't going to put you on the air immediately if you call, so you can just call and give us your question, or if you want to, you can go on the air, so we will have someone pick up the line and figure that out for you. Also, you can email us at news@kxcj.org, and we will pick up those questions from our email. So, let's get started with talking about the situation down in California. So we've got hundreds of thousands of people being forced to evacuate, almost hurricane force winds coming off of the mountains there, and just kind of making a conflagration down there. And of course, the power shut off. So what can we learn from that situation there going on in California with getting better prepared for something like that here?
Yeah, it's a good topic to remind folks that the public safety power shutoff program, which we are seeing currently being enacted in California, is also a plan here to be implemented in right now just four counties in Oregon. Josephine County is one of those. Not through PG&E, but through Pacific Core or Pacific Power, who provides the power here in our county primarily. And so we tried to do a lot of public outreach earlier this year. We first heard in
End of May
that the public safety power shutoff program was approved to go forward in our county as well as a couple of other counties in Oregon. It had the potential to be implemented this summer. Obviously, we were blessed with a gorgeous summer and continue to be blessed with a beautiful fall. However, each summer going forward, including this next one, we have the possibility that we could also experience power outages here that are meant to be proactive, to shut down power in certain high-risk, high fire consequence areas to prevent their lines creating a spark or ignition source. And I think one of the useful points to make in trying to people want to compare our potential experience to what's happening down in California, it's important to remember that we do not have the Santa Ana wind situation that they have down there. So there, like you said, hurricane level gusts and sustained gusts is what they're experiencing right now. It's very, very rare for us. If we get high level gusts, they are quite limited in duration. They're pretty specific. They're in specific zones or areas or at certain elevations. And so here, when we are looking with utilities at what a public safety power shutoff looks like, likely to be highly localized, not countywide, and also of much shorter durations. Be very unusual for it to be multiple days. They're more anticipating hours.
Yeah, so some of the people in California have had their power off for days, and I've heard people didn't know, whether they were going to have power on the next day or not, just because the utility wasn't sure about that right up until, you know, maybe less than 24 hours before they got their power shut off. So I just wanted to talk about when that does happen, you know, those power shutoffs are going to affect people who have resources and people who don't have resources. So some people might be able to go out and get a generator. They might already have a generator ready to go at their house. They might be prepared. And other people might not have those resources or might not be ready to deploy a generator with their particular system. So what resources are available to people who maybe can't get a generator up and running?
Yeah, so that's a concern of ours for sure. We've had multiple discussions amongst ourselves, fellow emergency responders in the area, as well as the utility. So there's a couple different topics. One thing I want to check off just right away to let people know, we were able to request and have approved from Pacific Power that if they implement a public safety power shutoff in one of the zones in Josephine County, they are going to bring in a community resource center, which is what they're describing it as. It is not a shelter, meaning it's not a place where you will be spending the night or can get showers. However, they will have air conditioning if it's hot. Obviously, we're talking likely summer scenarios. Right. Air conditioning, strips, power strips, so you can power up any kinds of devices, rest areas, seating, information booths, and those sort of community resource kind of day-to-day resources. Ricky was just reminding me, they're also saying they would have pallets of water available for folks who needed that. So that's an important piece that we think will serve an immediate need for those who cannot provide generated power at home. They will have these community resource centers up and available. So we're working on the utilities or with the utilities on that. I did want to touch base, and maybe I'll let Ricky speak here, about generator safety and what it really means for a lot of folks to suddenly feel motivated to run out and get a generator. There's some things to think about there. So we want to talk about that.
So to kind of address your first question, what can we learn from the power outages that are happening now in California? I think we can learn to be prepared. When people heard about the power outages, everyone went out to try to purchase a generator or fill up their tank, and they're putting caps on how much you can, you know, how much fuel you can put in your vehicle so they can share what they've got. They're stripping shelves of things, and that happens when people haven't taken the necessary steps to prepare. It certainly doesn't mean that every person has to go buy a generator. People lived for thousands of years without having generators. We did it differently. So we kind of have to look at an event as how can we personally handle it if we can't afford those things? Not everybody can. I personally don't own a generator. It would be nice, but I'm not going to go out and buy one right now. We've had a few days of power outages. We can have a long period of time of power outages, but I would do what I've always done. We would build a fire. We would light candles. We would do simple things. It doesn't have to be...
Play cards, read a book.
Exactly. It doesn't have to be complicated and expensive, and preparedness is really a progressive action. It's not a one-time thing. You don't drop a credit card and buy a whole bunch of supplies that you don't have the skill to use. You can waste a lot of money doing that, and people have. You buy a generator, you put some fuel in it, let it sit for 5 years, and then try to fire it up, and you've just ruined your generator. So there are things to consider. Having it hardwired into your house versus plug it in, where do you put a generator? Where do you not put a generator? It's all the kind of stuff that you need to look into as part of your preparedness plan as a whole. And also understanding that we go for long periods of time without having these outages. You know, we're not always in a state of crisis, so there's a lot of time for preparing when it's not that moment. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe we can learn from those few days, maybe in the winter when we have a winter storm and the power gets shut off, kind of learn how to cope during that time. Of course, my issue when the power goes out is that I'm afraid all the food in my freezer is going to defrost. All that squash that I I saved from over the summer is going to go to waste. But a lot of people have more pressing concerns, you know, more vital need for power, you know, medically necessary equipment. So,
which again brings us back to the preparedness perspective. you have to be planning for your own personal need and your family's personal need, in your neighborhood's personal need. I mean, you're coming at this from multiple sides, but starting with your own. What do I need to keep myself safe and healthy and warm? What do I need for my family? And what do I need for my neighbors or my friends who might be dependent upon me? Mm-hmm. So it isn't just put some cans of beans away and a gallon or two of water and we'll be fine. It's much bigger than that. It's thorough. We need to be really thorough when we're thinking about preparedness and the considerations that if we have children, if we have animals, if we have special needs, those are outside of ourselves and they're people that are going to need assistance in that way. So there are plans that can be put in place and considerations that should be made if you have medically dependent people or if you have small children that are going to need that kind of assistance.
To tack on to that, a couple of items around the medically dependent folks. So Pacific Power has requested that if you are a customer of theirs and you need power for a medical device, that you contact them. They have information through their customer service line as well as online on their website. They want you to, they cannot ask you that legally, like what is your medical need for power, but they are asking customers to be willing to disclose that to Pacific Power, and that puts them on a priority list. And then that matches with prioritization that we try to have with first responders on who gets contacted. If this person said that they medically required power and no one's contacted them for a certain period of time, can we get someone out there on foot if necessary knocking on that door? Has Pacific Power highlighted that neighborhood or that specific residence for re-energization as a priority above others? What does that look like? So we're starting to have those conversations. The other piece to remember in terms of your own preparedness is have conversations with your doctors. There are some medications where you can get a 90-day supply if you ask and you explain why you're asking. So if an event should happen today, you can feel reassured, well, I know I have at least 2 months' supply. Mm-hmm. Obviously, some medications they can't or would not be able to do that. But there are some where that's a possibility, as well as if you have a medical device that requires a battery pack, there are a number of insurance providers that allow a free additional battery pack, for example, or the medical device provider can assist you in how to locate some. So you have additional battery banks that will extend you from 12 hours to 48 hours, those sorts of tips. And yeah.
So obviously it's very important, as you just said, that that your utility knows that you are reliant on something like that. So if it's you or someone you know who is reliant on some medical equipment to stay alive and healthy, then you know, make sure that they let Pacific Power know about that. And of course, I'm sure the utility is reaching out to people about that, but couldn't hurt to remind someone who you know who may be dependent on that and you know hasn't let Pacific Power know.
It is not a guarantee for priority re-energization. Uh-huh. However, it is meant to flag locations or residences of concern or customers of high concern. And if they cannot re-energize them under a certain timeline, then the understanding right now with the utility is that they will get a hold of first responders, get a hold of emergency management, so we can help facilitate check-ins and do what we can to support those folks if the power shutoff should go on for a sustained duration.
Uh-huh. And is there a certain length of time, and this, I guess this can go beyond just power shutoffs, is there a certain length of time that you suggest people have enough stockpiled for?
So the state standard is 2 weeks ready. Mm-hmm. And I talk to a lot of people around the county, and the standard answer I get is, I think I'm good for a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. But what that means is you do not go to the store for 2 weeks. You don't put fuel in your vehicle for 2 weeks. You do not have assistance medically for 2 weeks. You don't go to the pharmacy. You go nowhere. You have no one helping you. You are completely by yourself or with your network of people that you've already set up. You don't need assistance outside of that group of people for at least 2 weeks. What I would add to that is 2 weeks ready is really good for a long-term power outage. But if we're looking at something like Cascadia, which we have to look at because of where we live, 2 weeks is really scratching the surface in a lot of ways. And it's not meant to frighten people. It's meant to kind of open eyes and make people look realistically about what that event could do to our area. So 2 weeks is a starting place.
Right. So that's kind of a good minimum to kind of start thinking about, okay, what is 2 weeks, me here, my family alone in this, in our property, can we sustain ourselves? But also it's a good way to think, to extrapolate and think about, what if we get the big one and it's longer than 2 weeks?
Right. So I would also encourage people with that. You don't have to go from nothing to 2 weeks ready, because that's a lot. That's a lot to purchase. It's a lot to get organized. Mm-hmm. What you want to do is start with the very basics. What I don't have right now, we would suggest everyone that lives in the state of Oregon have 3 days worth of supplies in their vehicle, because the vehicle goes with you wherever you're going. You know, whether you're at the store or you're at school or you're at work, the vehicle will often go back and forth with you. If you have those supplies in your vehicle, even if you're having a personal emergency, you would be okay for those 3 days, whether you sat and waited for help or you had to walk yourself back a few miles, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. That's a good starting point, and that's a pretty doable kit that you could get put together in a relatively short amount of time.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a vehicle, you can just duplicate that small kit in a backpack.
Yes. And we would suggest it's in a backpack anyway. You're going to want to use your arms. If you could put things in a pack, you don't have to hold them in your hands. Mm-hmm. That's the best way to be able to transport that kind of stuff.
And of course, the county's still selling go bags, right?
They are. Yes, we are. They are a $70 one-person three-day kit and a $95 mm-hmm. two-person three-day kit. It is a basic kit. It is what you would need to survive if you want to be thriving in that situation. There are probably things that you would want to add to it, but it does take care of your food, your water, Mylar blanket, a hand crank radio, solar power flashlight, USB charger, whistle, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
So just this is a basic survival kit.
It is.
And where can people go if they're interested in something like that?
They can find that information on rvem.org, which is Rogue Valley Emergency Management. Under the Get Ready Rogue tab, there's all of our events are laid out. It's a pretty cool site where you can click on a specific event and find out what information you need to be ready for that event. At the bottom of that page, there is a Go Kit link, and that will tell you what's in the kit in either one of them and how much they are and how to order them.
Okay. All right. Check it out. It's rvem.org. That's where you can go to purchase a three-day Go Kit. There's also a lot more information there on that site. Check it out and think about what it might mean for you to be 2 weeks prepared. And with that, we are going to take a quick music break. When we get back, maybe we can talk a little bit about what's in store for this winter. And once again, you're listening to KXCJLP, 105.7 FM, Cave Junction. This is Valley News and Views, and once again, if you have a question, now would be a good time to call, 592-4112, or send your email questions to news@kxcj.org, and we'll be right back.
I'm
are back. You're listening to Valley News and Views here on KXCJ, and I am here with Emily Ring and Ricky Perrin from Josephine County Emergency Management, and we are talking about how to be prepared for fire,
all kinds of winter storms,
for anything. Be prepared
life.
For everything.
For life.
Yes. All right, so so let's talk about some of the educational events that are coming up, what you're doing to get people ready for the winter, things like that.
So generally speaking, our outreach involves meetings that people in the community in Josephine County put together. They host, and I would go and do a personal preparedness presentation. And I have a lot of people say, well, we want to have a presentation on such and such a preparedness, like a large scale. What would we need to do as a whole big group? But really, that's too much. You have to start with, what am I doing personally to be prepared? What do I have on hand to take care of myself? And go out from there. So we try to bring everybody back to that personal level of preparedness. And really, honestly, when I talk to people, I talk to them about Cascadia, because if we're ready for Cascadia, we're ready for the winter storm, and we're ready for the summer power shutdowns, and we're ready for the little flooding that we have here and there. We're ready for all of it. So we want to kind of aim high and be able to grab all those smaller events along the way.
Mm-hmm. Before we move into winter, one of the things I wanted to touch on, as right before the break, we were talking about the 2 weeks ready concept, and we talked about the go kits and things like that. And while part of personal preparedness is about stuff, we also really try to emphasize skills. Like, I'm never going to be able to afford, nor am I going to want to store a year's worth of beans and rice. Some people will, and that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. I've decided that it's better for me and more useful for me to emphasize skills. So can I do a little winter gardening? What does that look like? Can I build a solar oven out of a cardboard box and some aluminum foil? Have I tried that? What does that look? Mm-hmm. Do I know how to start a fire under various conditions and sanitize and find my own water? If I can do that, I don't necessarily need the stuff. And so we have a, if you want to.
Oh, no, I was, sorry. Forgive me for sounding like I wanted to interrupt you.
Don't say it. No, but we have a variety of courses that we're beginning to offer, which emphasize in a variety of depths, like how crazy do you want to get with us? About do you want to spend 8 hours with us learning how to find and sanitize water and get it ready in 10 different ways? We can do that with you, and it's so much fun.
That is part of our outreach, is doing really extensive education, like training opportunities that we don't really have anywhere else in the community that I'm aware of anyway. So that water purification, we've got fantastic people that come and teach more about water than you knew even existed. That you could spend 6 hours learning about how to find water when it's not readily available, how to filter water and purify water in a couple of different methods. And we do the same thing with a medical training class. We've got an austere medical conditions class that is really cool and teaches you all kinds of things that you would need to know if you didn't have all of the supplies with you. It's one thing to go, I've got this crazy medical kit that's got everything in the world, but if you've left that and it's just you, what are you going to do then? So we have people that are able to kind of come and help us understand what we can do to help save someone's life in that process. And as Emily mentioned, the skill building is a huge part of it. So it's really a preparedness triangle that we encourage people to take a look at. You absolutely need to have a plan in place. Where are you going? What's your communications plan with your family? What happens if you can't reach them in the event? Do they know where to go, what to do, where to meet? All of that kind of coordination is part of your plan. Then do you have the skills in place to use your plan and to use all the supplies that you've purchased, supplies being the third part of that triangle? Again, going back to the generators, you don't buy a generator and not learn how to use it. You don't sit with somebody that's choking and go, I wish I knew the Heimlich. You learn that Heimlich so that you know it when you need it. You learn CPR so that you have it. You learn how to apply a tourniquet. Those are just, that's skill building. So we do try to offer that in the community, and we do offer, it's called Prep U. It is a 7-part preparedness series that takes people from whatever their current level of preparedness is to the level that they would like to get to, and then kind of equip them for moving on well beyond that after that mm-hmm. class wraps up.
And this is maybe sounds like a lot, or the prepper thing is trendy. But really, where we look at it is, these are all skills we all used to have. Like 100 years ago, you knew how to splint a broken bone because mm-hmm. you probably fell down in your field behind your mule. you knew how to skin your hog.
You didn't have cell phone reception to get someone to come out and help you,
and you had no one to do it for you. Yeah. So you had to learn it.
Mm-hmm. Or you learned to get along with your neighbor, whether you liked him or not. You just figured out how to get along together because you knew that you were best going to survive together. And so it's mm-hmm. a little bit of hearkening back and re-embracing just a lot of things our wonderful, magical technology has allowed us to forget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of these things, they aren't even necessarily things that... I mean, there are things that can serve us well beyond an emergency situation. You know, these first aid skills, these medical skills, these, starting a fire, purifying your water. These are all very good things to know, even if we don't have Cascadia in the next 100 years.
Correct. And that doesn't mean we don't fully embrace modern technology either. We run an emergency alert system here in Josephine County. It's the same in Jackson County, called Citizen Alert. And that is how we get emergency alerts to you. That is our first line of notification to you. It typically goes on your cell phone, although you can also have it go to your landline as well. You can also get email alerts. Mm-hmm. So we recommend that everybody go to rvem.org, and you'll see on the front landing page up there in the upper right-hand corner a little bit of a bullhorn that says sign up for Citizen Alert, and you can go through that and start to get prepared to get emergency alerts. Hopefully we never have to notify you of a impending evacuation or anything else of concern in your neighborhood, but we definitely would like you to be in there. It is not something we force on anyone. It is not something we require people to do. It is a voluntary opt-in, so it's mm-hmm. on you, but we want to make sure you know about it.
So I want to add to that, everyone with a cell phone should have their own account. It is intended to reach each person with a cell phone at the same time so that you are not the holder of the messages in your home and you're having to disseminate mm-hmm. information in the middle of a crisis. If you're all signed up for your own account, even if 5 people have cell phones in the same home, then everyone's notified no matter where they are in the county. Everybody knows we've got to get home mm-hmm. and start an evacuation process. So right. we do encourage that. And you can put up to 5 addresses in that system. So take advantage of it and be kept aware of anything pertaining to life and safety. We don't send out messages that are not pertaining to life and safety with that system. And you will not be notified if there's a county-wide, or we wouldn't notify the whole county on an event that happens that's localized. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to get information that doesn't pertain to you personally.
So once again, just so I have this correct, this system automatically sends you a notification to your landline, right?
Well, let me clarify that. All landlines are automatically loaded into the system.
Okay.
Yeah, and we select where the notifications go based on where the event or incident is occurring, who's going to be impacted, that, mm-hmm. who's in potential harm's way. And then on top of that, you can voluntarily add additional notifications. So a lot of people say, well, the landline's great, but I'm always on my cell phone, or I would prefer to get texts or emails. And so we need you to provide that information. We do not have that.
Okay. So you're... If you want to get notifications on your cell phone, you got to go to rvem.org and sign up for Citizen Alert.
Correct.
I'd like to add a little something with that, just as we've kind of been watching some things that are now coming out about the Paradise Fire and people depending on an alert system in order to know what was happening. And some people waited for that alert before they would evacuate. And I just want to throw out there that these are all efforts that we're making to get in touch with people. But there are times when systems fail and you need to be situationally aware. You need to know what's happening in the community. And at any point that you personally feel uncomfortable, you're free to self-evacuate. You don't have to wait around for us to tell you, okay, it's your time to go. Mm-hmm. You have the freedom to just look over the mountains and go, I'm not comfortable being here anymore. I'd like to leave. And you can do that. So definitely don't wait for that. And in a large scale event such as a Cascadia, we wouldn't be sending an alert. Everybody will know at the same time.
Right. We'll
Cascadia event. That's not the time for us to go, did everybody feel that? So we just want to make that clear.
And then maybe on the opposite end of the spectrum, behavior that we also note that we try to clarify with folks is every year people die in wildfires and hurricanes and other events and flooding because they refuse to evacuate when they receive the notification. And, and you know, some people, particularly in wildfire events, and I've had lots of people in the county tell me, oh, I'm just going to stay and I'm going to protect my home and I'm going to get my garden hoses together. And that is a choice you can make, but we encourage you to remember that every decision you make has a consequence. There are consequences to the first responders that put themselves in harm's way trying to alert you and notify you, like, please, you need to leave. There's harm to them if you decide at the last minute to leave late and then you are clogging up the road system and they're having difficulty getting emergency vehicles through past you. There's harm to loved ones if you do not make it because you chose not to evacuate. We don't take those notices lightly. We think about them a lot before we press those buttons. And we try to be very careful and precise as much as possible. And there's a real reason behind them. And so we ask people to take them seriously and go either, as Ricky suggested, sooner before you get the notice, as soon as you start to feel like, I'm uncomfortable. Maybe I'll just go down to the dollar store and just check out, like, you know, what's on sale for a couple of hours.
Yeah, like matches for your go-kit.
Yeah, maybe I'll just go get some, shop for some matches and stuff until I figure out what my situational awareness is.
Sure.
Or, okay, I have the alert. I'm grabbing my go bag and evacuation tote and I'm heading out. So, things to think about.
So I want to also mention the disaster registry. There is the Rogue Valley Council of Governments has this disaster registry for people that need assistance in evacuating. And the system can take a while to get into, but you can also find that information on rvem.org. But I would suggest that anyone who cannot self-evacuate sign up to be on this list of four first responders so that they're aware that you are in need. It doesn't mean that you are ahead of anybody else that needs assistance. It simply means that your name is on a list. People are aware that you're there, and they will do everything that they can to help you evacuate when it's necessary. But with that, again, in Cascadia, it's very likely that these services will not be available. So though you are in this system and somebody knows that you're there and you cannot self-evacuate, you have to make a plan for you have to make a backup plan. Your plan might be disaster registry, but you need that backup plan. What is it going to happen when you dial 911 and nobody answers? Mm-hmm. Or they say, I'm sorry, we can't send anyone. Mm-hmm. There has to be another plan in place. So it's working with smaller communities within our community. It's working with neighbors so that someone is going to come and check on you because you've coordinated that ahead of time just in your group.
And are there local, isn't ACERT, for example, one of those organizations that helps build these communities to have kind of a resilient network of people to check on each other?
Yes, absolutely. And we are very, very lucky here in the Illinois Valley to have Ivy CERT. They are the most active and the most robust and skilled CERT team in our local region. The next active one is in Ashland. We are trying to get, well, we intend to get a CERT team developed and going in Grants Pass as well. There used to be one. It has been defunct for a while. We want to resurrect that, but that takes a little bit of time. But those sorts of groups and organizations are absolutely key places to tie in, as well as neighborhood watch groups, FireWise groups, church groups. There's, you know, school groups.
So say for example, I live in rural Josephine County, and all four of my neighbors, this is just a hypothetical,
sure.
they all have massive pot grows and they shoot their guns off all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to just go walk into their property and introduce myself and say, hi, let's form a disaster plan, you know. So is there any way to kind of get connected with the neighborhood and kind of form a plan like that? Can that be done through CERT, or you were talking about some other potential avenues for that?
I would suggest, because the CERT program is so substantial here, being involved with that group of people, you're immediately getting connected with people that are thinking along the same lines. And mm-hmm. I think that's a good networking resource in this community. That wouldn't necessarily be the answer if you were in Grants Pass, because we don't have a CERT team in Grants Pass at this moment. But out here in the Valley, that is absolutely the place to start.
Also, there is a great convenience to being able to have some sort of plan in place with your immediate neighbors, just because mm-hmm. geographically, right, that makes sense.
Sure.
However, certainly there are all kinds of circumstances where, whether you're just uncomfortable or you just have antagonistic relationships you're not able to work through just yet until mm-hmm. till the need is really there. Certainly you can network with folks that you work with, for example. So when I was up in Lane County, I moved up there for a period of years. I didn't really know anybody. I lived in a remote area. It was difficult to get to know my neighbors, mm-hmm. but I networked with my coworkers. And I found out where my coworkers lived. One of them actually happened to live like 3 miles down the road.
Uh-huh.
And we put together a plan together between she and I. And sometimes when weather was bad, we would connect up and we would carpool and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So there are other ways to do it. But it's important not to try to isolate yourself.
Absolutely.
And statistically, people are more kind during an event than they are on a regular day. So you have hope that your neighbors are going to come out and go, hey, let's work together.
Because they might have a lot of pot to smoke, which is super important when you're stressed, but they're going to get hungry.
They might want your canned beans.
Just 5 minutes ago, you were talking about how it's best to go as soon as you possibly can. And I'm afraid that I might get a little bit lazy if I started smoking all my neighbor's pot.
It's good insight.
Nah, nice. I don't need to leave. Yeah, let me finish this bag of Cheetos.
Time. We're all time. Right.
Oh, no, I hadn't left yet? Oh, no.
I thought I left.
The pros and cons to everything, right? Yeah,
yes.
there's a time and a place. So we also mentioned winter planning, and so we wanted to take mm-hmm. this opportunity because we don't get on the radio here with you guys very often. So just to talk a little bit about car kits. And this, again, it's a little bit of a combination of stuff and skills, right? But stuff is sometimes easier for people to start with. So we want to just remind people kind of think, oh, yeah, jumper cables or tow straps for the winter.
Flares.
People tend to mm-hmm. kind of have those if they're thinking along the preparedness lines. But also very important might be hand warmers. You know, those little like hunting packs you can get that you can just rub together and they heat up for a series of hours. You can pick those up real cheap this time of year. You can get 5 for $2, you know, at Walmart mm-hmm. or whatever. Those are really useful and helpful if you're stuck in your car and you're out of gas or you can't heat yourself properly or you're not well prepared in what you're wearing. You can put those in your core areas, your armpits,
mm-hmm.
you know, between your legs, against your neck, and you can keep your core body temperature up. That's a good one. A blanket.
A blanket would also do the trick. That would be really handy. A blanket or a sleeping bag, and everybody should have water in their car
mm-hmm.
year-round. Really, to become dehydrated, you are adding a secondary emergency on top of your already bad situation. So have food, have water, change it out periodically. In the summer, you're going to need to change it out more frequently. But especially with our road conditions, you know, just having some ice on the road or some snow, people drifting off and ending up in a ditch,
mm-hmm.
having that stuff on hand is not difficult. It's not expensive, but it is life-saving. So we really encourage people to get themselves ready for a personal emergency and then, you know, build from there.
Mm-hmm.
Personal experience on that, you know, food is good, but try to have, especially during the winter, a plastic tote or something impenetrable to rodents, because
mm-hmm.
it's real sad when you're stuck on the side of the road. You're like, yes, I have those sweet Cliff Bars. Oh no, they're full of mouse poop and they've been eaten. And also in winter, just throwing a water jug that's never been opened into your car, you run the risk of freezing and splitting. So just make sure that you have a good container that has just room in it for the water to swell should that jug freeze.
Not just a store-bought gallon of water that's sealed.
That you've not opened, yeah. Let some water out.
And then a shovel is useful if you can find a little one. That's always handy. Having chained up often on the side of a road somewhere or in slush or had to check on somebody who'd slid off the side of the road, I've been often grateful that I had just a pair of, you know, spare pants, jacket, spare socks. I can do a lot if my feet are warm and dry. I can suffer through a lot with a spare pair of socks, you know, hat and gloves. And again, these are all things that probably we have lying around. They don't have to look good. They just have to serve you.
Very simple, simple purchases that we probably already have. And speaking of the hand warmers, that's probably the most valuable purchase you can make. You know, it could save your life and it's just fits in your pocket.
Right, exactly. And like you said, we're often surprised what we do when we start digging through those drawers. Oh, yeah, I did. I actually had that spare pair of gloves tucked away there. Those will work. A flashlight is always useful, of course. And a car charger for our cell phones.
And if it's possible, if you can get yourself in the habit of looking at a half tank as being empty, when you hit halfway mark, it's time to fill up. That's a good idea, especially when we're dealing with long distance traveling. And I had somebody say to me recently, I don't really have to put anything preparedness related in my vehicle, really, unless I'm leaving the state or going a long distance. But I would suggest walking the 30 miles between my home and Medford would be awful. And I'm not going out of state. I'm just running over to Medford, which I do all the time. Coming out here, if you happen to live out here and you head into Grants Pass regularly, or even Medford, I've talked to a lot of people out here that say, well, we go to Medford too. We go to Costco. That's a long walk. So you're going to want to have some things on hand to take care of your needs until someone else can come to help, if there's somebody else to come to help.
And again, we totally understand that that can feel like a financial burden for some folks. There were many years where I just kind of skated on empty fumes the day into work, the day before my paycheck, and I just went paycheck to paycheck, penny to penny like that. However, if you cannot keep at least a half tank full at all times, if we're talking emergency preparedness, at least during the summer when you know there's a potential wildfire event, for example, headed your way or close to your neighborhood, that might be the one time that you try to save aside to put a full tank in so that you're always ready for an evacuation notice. Or if you know a bad winter storm is coming, try to set those quarters aside or those dollars aside. So that at least once or twice a winter, if there's a bad storm coming or you might need to travel or evacuate, you've got the resources on hand. If you can't do it all the time, we certainly understand. So it's just adapting and trying to think ahead a little bit for yourself.
Yep. Always think about what the possibilities are and what we can do to be better prepared. All right, we're going to take another quick music break, and then we are going to be back here with Emily Ring and Ricky Perrin from Josephine County Emergency Management. You're listening to KXCJLP 105.7 FM, Cave Junction. And once again, you can call us at 592-4112 with any questions that you have. That's 592-4112, or email news@kxcj.org. We'll be right back. And we're back. You're listening to Valley News and Views here on KXCJ. I am Forrest, a volunteer DJ here at the station, and I'm here with Emily Ring and Ricky Perrin of Josephine County Emergency Management. And we're talking about all the ways to be prepared, what to have in your go bag, how to sign up for citizen alerts, and some of the outreach and education opportunities around here. So let's talk about some of the events that are coming up.
Sure. So one that we wanted to highlight that's specific to the Illinois Valley is the Living with Fire event, which is scheduled for November 16th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. That's going to be taking place at the gymnasium in the Illinois Valley High School. And the Living with Fire event's focus is to help people connect with resources and how to deal with reducing the fuels around their home. Now, going into spring is a great opportunity to do that. How to get your living situation more fire resilient before this coming summer. And so a number of organizations will be there, of course, ODF and BLM and Forest Service, biochar demonstrations will be there. We will be there. You know, Illinois Valley Emergency Services will be there. Also KS Wild and also IBCDO. There'll be information on fuels reduction loan programs and fuels reduction grants and all those sorts of different resources. So I think it'll be a good event.
Sounds like that if you live in the wildland urban interface, this might be a good thing to go to.
Yes, and also to bribe people to come and get this important information, there's going to be a great raffle prize, which our department has offered up and will be given to one lucky recipient or two.
And that prize is?
It's super awesome. I know that. Well, I'm looking at Ricky, and she is not helping me out at all. She's just laughing at me, letting me flounder. No, I couldn't remember if we had decided on whether it was going to be one of the Go kits that we talked about, the 3-day survival kit, or one of the solar panel charger kits.
I wasn't sure either, which is why I didn't
answer. Oh, great. Yeah.
It's going to be one of
those. It's going to be one of those. Okay. And they're both
a Go kit. They're both really cool, though, actually. Yeah. The solar power. It's a panel that you can hang on the back of your backpack or put on the dashboard of your car, and you can connect it to what's called the stone, and it will be a backup battery source for your phone, or you can plug it directly into your phone, the solar panel into your phone, and it'll charge your phone. So there, either way, it's a really cool prize.
Not just your phone, any US device. USB powered device will work off of it.
Those foldable solar panels have gotten really good in recent years. Just went backpacking with one, and it was amazing.
Yes.
Keep my phone charged.
You don't get it, but please come to the event.
You could get it if you win it.
Right. Could you remind us when and where that is once again?
Yeah, absolutely. That's called the Living with Fire event. It's scheduled for November 16th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and that's going to be at the Ivy High School.
Oh, all right. So right here at your local high school, Living with Fire event on the 16th. And we do have a question now from a listener. So this is going to be going into the potential Cascadia event a bit. So you were talking about skills earlier, and the question is, in the event of a large earthquake, what skills would be most useful? And secondary question, are there any plans to catalog those skills or store that info for various neighborhoods, so that you know that your neighbor has this skill or this neighbor has that skill, something like that?
So as far as useful skills, I think there are many. And I think it's important for people to understand that you don't have to have all of them personally. If you're working with a neighborhood, who really is going to be the people that you're depending on. While we'd love to depend on our families, unless they live next to you, you're probably not going to have them in the event. It's your best friend is whoever you're standing next to at the grocery store. People really band together in these types of events and help each other out and end up having long-term relationships because of it. So as far as useful skills go, that could be anything from I'm a ham radio operator to I've been canning food for years, and I know how to preserve with the best of them, and I can teach that to people. You might want to learn all of those emergency medical skills. You might not have the stomach for it, so you're going to find somebody that's going to work with you in your network of people, your neighborhood community, that has that skill, and you offer up your construction. I've done construction my whole life. I will gladly go around and help people fix their homes or reinforce homes before the event. So there, whatever your natural interest is, I would encourage people to develop those types of skills and then find people to fill in the gaps. Some people are not going to have the physical endurance to be one of those communications people that can hop on a bike and ride down and find out what's happening and bring back information if we can't get, if we don't have repeaters for ham radio. So use what you have, develop that, and be able to offer it to your community around you, and then find those people to work with to make a more robust group.
Build a team.
And, yes, build a team.
And so team building being a skill in and of itself, right? But I want to add on to that. If you were going to narrow it down amongst all your options, the ability to locate or store water and to purify it and boil it. So those water-related skills. And the reason being is we can go quite a ways without food if we have to. A lot of us, unless we have a medical condition that requires a specific regimen of certain nutrition, we can make it without food for a while, but we must have water on a regular, consistent basis. And then also we must rely on water, boiled clean water, to flush out wounds, to prevent infection. So I would say any water-related skill is critical and crucial, and that should be a high priority. Any skill that allows you to reduce or prevent infections in yourself or someone else is also crucial. And then how to keep yourself warm and dry, or cool and dry, basically, sheltered. Because I could be pretty darn injured, but if I have water to keep myself hydrated, I have some way to keep my infection rate down or minimal, and I have some sort of shelter so I don't get hyperthermic or hypothermic, I'm probably going to pull through.
I would add to that, which is kind of what you're alluding to, but fire building, it's kind of a funny thing, I think. When we want fires, they're hard to build. When we don't want them, they're so easy. People accidentally start fires all the time. But when you really need a fire and you're camping, it's just, why is this so difficult? Well, what happens when you don't have all of your regular supplies on hand to build your fire? So learning some of those different ways with things that you would otherwise have on hand, that's fantastic. So when we do our Prep U, we teach people about four or five different ways to start a fire.
And you were talking about, during the break, we were talking about how if we do have this big earthquake event, the bridges might be out for months. Even if they don't collapse, they're going to be potentially damaged, and transportation could completely break down.
Yes. So that's something that I think helps people understand the magnitude of the Cascadia event. We're so accustomed to hopping in our car, filling up our tank, and then driving where we want to go. And we're used to our comforts and conveniences, but there is a real possibility that our bridges would not be usable, and you cannot enter Josephine County without crossing a bridge. So we have the potential to lose bridges, and even if we don't lose them, they are not safe to drive over until they've been inspected and have they been given the stamp of approval. So that would need to happen after every aftershock. So if we have in the tens of 7.0 and higher aftershocks, which is projected, and in the 20s of 5.0 and higher, and then in the hundreds of smaller, I'd be less concerned with. We had a series of small earthquakes in the last 24 hours that most likely none of us felt. They were 5.2, 4.9, that type of thing.
Right off the coast.
Right off the coast. But if we had those 7.0 and higher aftershocks, that's a situation where you wouldn't want to cross a bridge. So add that to ODOT is going to be beginning the fixing of I-5 2 to 3 years after the event, because it's an expensive freeway. It has a lot of overpasses and bridges itself. They're going to focus on 97 so they can get supplies up and down. It's much more of a thoroughfare. If we don't have I-5, Where are we going? How are the trucks coming in? You know, they're just large scale considerations. Absolutely.
And in the couple minutes we have left, let's talk about some outreach events down here in the Illinois Valley.
So we already mentioned the Living with Fire. However, we would like to offer personal preparedness presentations to any group in the community. It doesn't matter if it's just a neighborhood that's gotten together and they want to have a presentation. Mm-hmm. It can be churches or small groups or the Rotary groups, you name it. Any group of people. If you can get 10 people together, I will come out here and do a personal preparedness presentation.
All right. You heard it here. Ricky Perrin from Josephine County Emergency Management will give you a personal preparedness presentation if you can get a group together, if there's any group interested in that. So how would you suggest they reach out to you about that?
They can call our office, and they can call me directly if they like at 541-474-5308. You can call the main line at 541-474-5300, and Emily will answer that line, and she can tell you all the same information I can.
Only I'm not as cute and fun as Ricky.
Right. So don't expect that in the meeting. but just call our office is the best way, or you can send me an email.
Okay. All right. Well, once again, personal preparedness presentations are available to groups down here. So reach out to Josephine County Emergency Management for that. And once again, you can also go to rvem.org. That's the Rogue Valley Emergency Management website. That's both Jackson and Josephine counties, for information on the Citizens Alert, as well as purchasing go bags. And once again, we've got the Living with Fire event at the Illinois Valley High School, November 16th, was it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Starting at 10 a.m. and learn all about living around wildlands and increasing fire resiliency and all about fire. And we're just about out of time here. Oh, I've got one question just on the tail end from email here. We can squeeze this in.